Welcome aboard, everybody. This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro is taking a well-deserved day off today, but Richard Roper is sitting in with us today. Hey, Rich.
Hello, hello. And a tribute to Ro, I will start and stop a thought in the 5 o'clock hour and continue through the 6 o'clock hour.
Can you also just... There'll be a few stories here. Well, I think people will miss panicking. And we're going to talk about a polar vortex. We have a couple other things coming up that I think there's some expectation now that is fulfilled, you know, that sort of voice. But
yes.
We miss Ro today, and he will be back tomorrow.
Yes.
So we got a lot to get to today. You know,
there's a lot going on, some of it extremely tragic and heartbreaking, and some of it baffling, and some just sad.
It's a good way to sum it up. It feels like one of those, there's a lot of somber news to take in. When you lose two Chicago police officers in one day, that is a sad day for our city. And there's no question. Yeah. And we're learning more about the circumstances that the body cam footage is revealing. Mm. There was clearly some sort of misunderstanding that there were two trains there. We're going to get into a little bit more about what happened there. But let's not forget that these officers were pursuing a gunman at the time. They were putting their lives in danger, pursuing a bad guy, a man with a weapon who was shooting that weapon, and they were then killed in the line of duty. So let's say a little prayer if you're so inclined, or just thank your lucky stars that you'll be with your family this holiday time.
And family, young family men.
So true.
The worst kind of tragic reminder that every single police officer, firefighter, anyone who puts their life on the line, every time they kiss a spouse or kiss a loved one goodbye and walk out that door, there's no guarantee they're coming home.
No.
And that's the sacrifice they make. We talk a lot about police officers on this show, and you and Ro do a lot of great work with various foundations, and we also talk about the dark side. But as always, we're reminded that 99% of the police officers out there got into it for the right reason and are serving for the right reason and are willing to risk their lives for our safety and protection.
They would throw their lives in danger and sacrifice themselves for your life. And that's, you know, that's what we see on a all too frequent basis here. This year, we've lost four officers in the line of duty. Oh. You think about Officer Sam Jimenez just a month ago with that active shooter situation. Mm-hmm. Commander Paul Bauer, we can't forget, earlier in February. These two officers, and this is a district, the district these officers are out of is where a lot of young officers are assigned earlier in your career. It's a high crime area. One of them 2.5 years on the job, one just 18 months on the job. And they were assigned to this district where they've seen two suicides this year, these two deaths, and then another officer, a female officer, collapse of a heart attack on the job at the same very district.
Right. In addition to, obviously, the danger of physical violence, there's an enormous stress and the toll it takes, obviously, on a lot of officers as well.
Evident there, for sure. We're going to get more into that. Ben Bradley will be joining us from WGN-TV. Pat Brady's going to talk to us about the latest with the Flynn sentencing. Everyone thought that the sentencing would come down today, and what a courtroom drama situation. We're going to try to make sense of that. Everyone, I think, expected that he would not receive any jail time, which was the prosecution's request, and often that is fulfilled, and the judge certainly takes that in consideration. But the judge has the ability to not do that as well. And today we heard quite some harsh words about General Flynn in this situation.
And it was really stunning. I mean, talk about out of a TV show. I almost expected to hear like, chung, chung. I mean, because you just don't expect the judge to do that. I mean, very strong words and very powerful words. Took everyone, I think, on both sides by surprise. Certainly took the White House by surprise.
They delayed the White House press briefing today, so it seemed as if they were sort of trying to figure out exactly what happened as well. Pat Brady will be here to talk about that. He'll put on his political hat and also his prosecution hat, or his prosecutor's hat. So he can talk about that. Tom Skilling, and then we've got Alex Stone, the Hyperloop. Are you you believing in this Hyperloop, Richard?
No, I don't.
You know, it's interesting because you think about Tesla shareholders and all the promises that Elon Musk has given them and not delivered on. But now we're supposed to believe that in 18 months, this great, you know, $1 billion project that is totally funded by this billionaire is going to be in place, take you to O'Hare in 11 minutes from downtown. And it's all good.
Sure. Is it going to go right past the casino that they've been building since 1987? And, you know, the Hyperloop, that was when Danny Bonaducci, I think, was doing middays back in the Hyperloop, and when everybody there was on high energy. So, I don't think it's going to happen. But But if it does, I'll see you there. I'll meet you there with my boarding pass.
We'll go to O'Hare. We'll fly to Vegas together. But we've got Alex Stone. He's a reporter getting very close access to the demonstration that's underway on California today. We've got some aldermen out there, city officials checking it out, trying to see what's what, and explain to us more about the Hyperloop, a top five at five you won't believe. And then you had a fascinating interview. Actor Steve Carell came in, and everybody was impressed with him.
Yeah, absolutely. Steve Carell, of course, everybody knows him from The Office. He's got three movies that are out this year. Two are out right now, are coming out, and one coming up in the next week or so. And this movie, Welcome to Marwen, is a marvel. And Robert Zemeckis, Southside Chicago native, grew up in Roseland, went to Fanger High. And if you don't know his name, Robert Zemeckis directed everything from Who Framed Roger Rabbit to the Back to the Future movies to he won the Oscar for Forrest Gump, The Polar Express. And he's always been at the forefront of like the meshing of technology and story. So we talk about that as well, because this movie is a combination of live action and animated stuff. And Steve Carell is just one of the sweetest, just what you'd
expect.
How is
that possible? He's a huge star. And you would expect, you know, I don't know, you just expect there to be a little bit of frostiness there. And everybody who met him in this building as he came in for the interview that you arranged was just, wow. Oh my gosh, he was so kind. He
so
was
down
so nice.
To earth, and I did a Q&A with him, as you know, as well after one of the screening. Yeah. And you know, a lot of times when the stars are done with these Q&As, they have to leave. It's not that they don't even want to stay; they got somewhere to be, or they just, you know, they've been working all day, and you know, just inevitably people find out that someone like Steve Carell's at the theater, even if they don't have tickets, and they're waiting outside with posters from 40-year-old Virgin and all, you know, props from The Office. He stopped and signed and posed and was genuinely, you know, pleased to do it, and just as self-effacing and as lovely guys you want to meet.
Just love them even more. All right, that's a lot coming up, but we're going to check in with WGN TV's Ben Bradley on the other side of this break.
Great to talk to Ben.
But first, let's check the traffic trouble spots right now with Jen DeSalvo.
A pastor and painter who transformed his suburban church. See the work of this Midwestern Michelangelo tonight. That's on WGN TV News at 9. If we only, Anna, knew somebody at WGN News who could speak to us and tell us everything that's happening.
Who would that be? We've got...
Mark Sapelsa?
We still love Mark, but he's not there at WGN.
I'm a Ben Bradley guy myself.
Hey, he's available.
Ben Bradley.
Hello, Ben.
So exciting to come on the radio with you without Ro here. I feel like we could just... say anything we wanted about him.
Yeah, just don't crack that egg on the fireplace,
Joel. Not a good idea.
I wish we could talk to you under better circumstances, Ben, but of course, we've got this... I think this has got to be an unprecedented tragedy, what happened to these two young police officers.
30 years since we've seen two officers killed, but you're right, the way they died.
But with the train.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's more information, right, about the body cam footage. There's some information that came from that.
Oh, and boy, imagine the difficult task of Department Brass and those who were tasked with investigating this to have to look at that video from the officers' body cameras. And there's also video, we presume, from the trains. Most of these commuter trains nowadays not only have event data recorders, but also have what amounts to dash cameras. Mm. And no doubt those will be reviewed. But what we've learned today from a Chicago police spokesperson after seeing the video, you know, the big question has been, how did these two officers not see or hear the train coming? Mm. And according to the department, they did hear a train coming, but it was one of two trains that were passing in the area. So these officers were responding to ShotSpotter. That's the automated system that detects gunshots. That was the report of shots being fired. They apparently saw a guy shooting potentially just into the railroad embankment, and they were pursuing him. They were up walking southbound on the tracks, and they could see and hear a Metra train that was heading toward their direction. The train was moving to the north. But that northbound train is believed to have drowned out the sound of another train, the South Shore train, which was heading south. And so as the officers apparently moved to avoid the Metra train, they didn't know that they were stepping into the path of that other South Shore train. And that's how they were both struck and killed.
So sad. You've got young officers, 1.5 years on the job, 1.18 months on the job, young families, and just devoted in every way. You're hearing from some of their family members today talking about how this is what they love to do. And that, yes, they were assigned to a tough district. They knew what they signed up for, but they were committed to protecting protecting that neighborhood, and that's what they did. When the shots were fired and they received that call, they started to pursue the man with the gun.
Yeah, they didn't say, oh, I'm not going to go up into that area. I'm not going to go up on that overpass. I'm not going to go, you know, onto those train tracks to pursue this guy. That's exactly what they did. And the man that they were pursuing is in police custody right now. He's not been charged with anything at this point. So today we're, like you, covering the stories of these two officers, hearing from their families, hearing why they joined the police department. One of them, we believe, was an Air Force veteran. So we're going to have that for you coming up this afternoon, as well as the latest on this investigation, because there are questions, you know, about, you know, these officers being up on the tracks, but also, you know, did the train conductors or the train operators, were they able to see him? That South Shore train, it almost wouldn't have mattered. They believe it was going, you know, 50, 60 miles an hour, and that takes a long time to stop. There were several sets of tracks in that area. So who knows if they had seen the train, if they would have been able to get out of the way. You know, that's something we just...
So, Ben, what you're saying, too, though, is if a conductor or anybody was going to go to some sort of manual override, by the time you see someone, it's probably too late. And so these two officers, in other words, the train was literally behind them, the train that eventually
struck them.
They never saw it coming.
They saw an oncoming train.
They saw the other train.
Yeah, they just didn't see it. They just didn't see the South Shore train that hit them. And then you also think about the train crew, and we always do, you know.
Yes.
You know, it ends up in the traffic reports, right? Like, oh, you know, there was a train versus pedestrian accident, or a train versus car. And, you know, it gets kind of talked about in the media, you know, from a traffic issue. But the reality is, every time a train hits somebody, the locomotive engineer actually has to stay in the cab. It's the conductor, by policy, that has to go out and see what that train hit. So just an awful task. You had hundreds of people on that train as well.
And then you think about the fellow officers having to lead the investigation into their own there. Just a horrible situation.
And when they responded to this, Ben, that's when they, I mean, they still had to do their job in terms of arresting the suspect, right? I mean, at the time of this horrible tragedy, that suspect was still out there with a gun, with a semi-automatic handgun.
Certainly.
Well, it's been a tragic year for the department, and these are four officers now we've lost this year. If you look at Commander Paul Bauer earlier this year, you had Officer Sam Jimenez. Just a month ago, we were here talking about something similar, an officer, young officer on the job, rushing into danger to protect others, and he lost his life, and now we have two more officers.
Right. And the 5th District, where these officers work, has had its own excruciating pain this year. Two officers committed suicide in the last year at that department in the parking lot of that police station.
Yeah, in addition to an officer having a heart attack and dying on the job, now you have two more. So they have grief counselors sending there, as you might imagine. Richard spoke earlier about the stress of this job, and, you know, God bless our officers. Say a prayer for them if you're so inclined, because this is going to be a rough holiday for that family, those two families, for sure.
Certainly.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Ben.
Good to be with you.
Thanks.
Let's check in with Judy Pilak, find out what's happening in the news. In the news, it is sponsored by AppleChevy.com. This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro is taking a day off today. We've got Richard Roper in the studio and Pat Brady. Thank goodness you're here. We want to talk about General Flynn because it was a most unexpected thing that happened at the courthouse today. I think most people were expecting the prosecutors requested no prison time, that is what the judge was going to grant, and that he would go along with sort of the slap of being, you know, lying to feds and have that on his record, but nothing more. Instead, something very different happened, and a lot of people were astonished to see the judge very harshly speaking to General Flynn. You sold your country out, and the rhetoric, stronger than you expected?
Yeah, accused him of treason. He walked it back, but yeah, very strong. But it's got to remember, this is a deal that the defense has stated their case, the prosecution has stated their case. It's up in the, so is the probation department, but it's up to the judge to accept it. And I've been in that situation where the judge is not happy and he yells at you, then you say, judge, maybe we'll come back tomorrow.
So why
have you been in that situation, Pat, though, where you walked in very confident of what was going to happen? Here's how it's going to play out. The judge is going to say this, we're going to say this, and then the judge says that, and you go, recess sounds good, lunch, holidays.
It was
90 days, is that acceptable?
Yeah, it was a big fraud case in Southern California. I was in the Southern District. Had it all, we thought, worked out. Because most of this is on paper before you go in. It's almost perfunctory now. It's not like the old days where you really argued a lot. And this judge went berserk on me.
Well,
and I go, Judge, maybe you need to talk to somebody higher up the food chain. So we'll come back tomorrow.
But how often is it that prosecutors will, I mean, there's been a lot of back and forth on this. This is not a quick, you know, recommendation by these prosecutors. They've gone through and discussed what they have, and they recommended no jail time. How often do you see a judge in a case like this, very high profile, say, no, I'm not sure that's what I'm going to go with here?
Rarely, if ever. Because it's not just, it's the defense submits theirs or adopts the prosecution's. We talked about the prosecution's memo, how much he has cooperated, unlike Cohen. And then the probation department submits another report, and 0 to 6 anyway, that's what he was looking at. It's not unusual for everybody to agree he's not going to jail. So it is, I think, very unusual for the judge to do this.
So now they're saying the judge's last words actually were happy holidays.
But it was
more like,
nice.
Happy holidays! they're going to reconvene in March, is that correct? It's going to be a delay of a couple of months for both sides?
I didn't see what the final date was.
Yeah. But that's what the reports are.
It's a status hearing, though, so it won't even be determined then, is my understanding. After that, they'll set a date for a sentencing.
There's the thing that's a little different, particularly from state court, usually there's more communication here. Mm. Like the judge telegraphs, I'm not happy with this, so get ready. Although I was watching last night, somebody had a heads up on this because one of the commentators on CNN said, I'm not sure if the judge is going to like this deal.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, you wonder, there was some talk about the idea that his defense attorneys decided to go with FBI wasn't following quite the protocol when they interviewed him. They didn't tell him that there was an investigation active. They didn't read him his rights. They didn't tell him that lying under oath or lying to us as federal agents could be a crime. And they didn't handle their proper protocol. That's what you've heard the White House saying. And you heard a version of that from his own defense team. And you wonder if the judge sort of felt that and heard that and thought, okay.
Yeah.
Not good.
A couple things. The defense can throw a monkey wrench into it by trying to make these arguments to point when their guy has basically accepted responsibility, cooperated. All you do is let the prosecution handle it. We agree. And I'm sure that irritated the judge. But I think in the White House, they've just been watching too much Dragnet.
Wow.
Because, you know, you don't get your Miranda rights unless it's a custodial investigation. And I'm not the brightest guy in the world, but when I talk to the FBI, I assume if I'm lying to him, it's a felony.
Neither and is that's the guy working the clicker in the West Wing.
No, there's another point that we talked about. Yeah. You weren't here, but we were last week. Yeah. That in the plea deal, or the plea agreement, or the sentencing memo, they did make mention of, we expect people at this level of government to behave with the highest ethics. And he's on notice that he should know this.
And also, sure. You know, the White House was, you know, spinning the tale that, as we talked about, that this was a trap. And then when Flynn was asked in court if he was trapped or misled, or no, he said, no, I wasn't. So that, you know, again, contradicts what the White House is trying to, you know, spin
right.
on this.
He's the former head of the NSA. He would know that lying under.
You would think so. Yeah. And he did say, I was aware.
As the former head of the NSA, when the FBI asks you a question about conversations, you can assume that the NSA that they've already heard him. And when they ask you those questions, you better tell the truth or just don't answer.
They already know the answer.
Well, yeah, apparently
probably.
He did say that.
That's what FBI agents do. They know the answer before they go.
Apparently he did even say that to the agents. You probably already know this, but what Ambassador Kislyak said was, and what we discussed was, and it isn't a crime for him to meet with the ambassador. He's the incoming NSA, National Security Advisor. He would want to meet with him. It's the part about lying to the feds and the discussions about the sanctions that the Obama administration had put in place over meddling in the election. You can't sort of contradict with the outgoing, you know, in the interim, the outgoing led administration. But do you think,
or even the settlement, the Israeli settlement issue too? There were two basic lies. But yeah, but his and they were flat out lies. If you compare the statements to what was in the sentencing memo, it's clear what he did.
Do you think it also has to do with the this other charge that we don't hear as much about, his working for the government of Turkey, accepting money from them as an unregistered foreign agent while you're the incoming NSA.
Right, and actually write a letter, op-ed, supporting what's going on in Turkey, which is not in our national interest.
Hmm. So the judge considers all of these things, and probably is that what leads them to where they are?
Yeah, right, it's all they can. I think the terms of relevant conduct or aggravating circumstances or mitigating circumstances, yeah, they can consider all that, and that's probably what he did here. That's probably where the treason comment came from. But the thing is with Flynn and with all these guys, and I just did this with my kids this morning when I caught him in a lie, why is everybody lying? Why did he have to lie about this?
Right.
And that's the question that I keep asking. Why is everybody lying about this? You could have answered and not lied and probably been in no trouble. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
What's the lie about? And that leads to the bigger question about what was the Trump transition team doing? And 87 communications with the Russians from the Trump team We're a long way from where we were 6 months ago.
But when the tone is set by the now commander in chief, who can barely construct a sentence without delivering a lie, whose lies have been well documented. So when that tone is set, not only with his businesses, but with his transition team and with his family, of course everyone's going to be the same way. Well, he doesn't tell the truth, so I'll not tell the truth to help him not tell the truth.
I've been saying this for months. He treats the Justice Department and Bob Mueller like a low-level New Jersey gaming regulator. You can't just lie to these guys about it. These are the pros. These aren't some guy from New Jersey.
Ultimately, though, we're led to believe this is about Russian collusion. And I think there are some people who feel like, okay, well, General Flynn was not colluding. He wasn't guilty of, treason. Do you buy that? You think that that there's more here to discover? Do you think this will ultimately lead to the president?
I'm not sure if it'll get to the president, but I do think in the last 3 months, like I mentioned, the 87 conversations that have been revealed between Trump people and the Russians, that the circle is getting a lot smaller. And as Roe always points out, the Trump story changes more and more every day. Mm-hmm. We went from, even in the Stormy Daniels stuff, I don't know anything about it, too. Well, whatever, I didn't authorize or direct him to make the payments. The same thing with Russian. If you look at what Bob Mueller is doing methodically, putting this case together, and the last bucket of the case is it's not collusion, it's conspiracy. And I could very easily see Flynn and the transition team agreeing on the object of the conspiracy, and that's the 371. That's where you get in trouble.
What do you make of Giuliani, Rudy Giuliani? It seems to be baffling a little bit, getting out there in front of all this and he sort of has this approach where I'm not going to deny that any of this didn't happen. It probably did. Maybe we did meet with the Russians about a Trump tower. Maybe his team did do that during the transition about, doing this in Moscow. Maybe we did pay off a porn star, and maybe we did worry that was going to affect the debates with Hillary in the election. And it just seems like an odd strategy.
He's another one, Anna, that there's this big sign that says, hey, there's a party here, and you open the door and it actually turns out to be a cliff, and you fall off the cliff, and you've seen about 200 other people already enter that door and fall off the cliff, and then Rudy goes, I think I'll go into that party. Next thing you know, he's on Twitter saying collusion is not a crime. But it didn't happen anyway, and even if it did, nobody got killed.
That's what he seems to be saying. Even if all these things did happen, then they're not crimes. I don't know how far
he's the guy when he was a U.S. Attorney in the Southern District that used to arrest the squeegee guys when he was mayor. So
yes.
He's come a long way. But to me, watching the America's mayor who did so much after 9/11, mm-hmm. it's like watching an athlete 3 years after he should have retired, mm-hmm. still playing. You're like, what are you doing? Because he's a hero. He always will be to me, and for all of us, what he did after 9/11. But I don't know what he's doing now.
Well, that is the case with a number of individuals who have hitched their wagon late in their lives to Trump. And if they just hadn't done that, we'd be talking about the 3-star general and his distinguished service, and we'd be talking about America's mayor. Instead, their legacy, paragraph one, maybe sentence one, is going to be what they did under the Trump umbrella, which he won't hold for his own son.
That's the A team, but there's some D teamers there too. We got
They're like, I'm going to get a picture at the Christmas party, and I'm going to be able to.
It's great. I'm sitting here at the NSA.
Let me get my 10 days in, and then I'll just be on TV forever.
Well, Papadopoulos saying he wants to run for Congress. That's
fantastic.
He's going to run.
Usually, you run
Orange County. I think.
Oh yeah, Orange County. So usually we're saying
I got the head of lettuce that's running against him, 3-1 favorite right now.
Because Republicans are doing really well in California right now, right, Pat Brady?
It's even worse than. No, I think it goes back to 1811 or 1836 or something like that. I just heard this stat. They lost everything in Republican Orange County.
The key issue then was, I'll let you pan for gold in any stream in California.
The only guy that won, it's the one that's under indictment.
Oh, yeah.
Duncan
Funny
Hunter.
Enough.
Yeah.
The world we live in. There's an Arizona senator now because she lost. Okay, well, just appoint you to the other one.
McSally. What do you think about that?
The people have not spoken.
Martha McSally. They say that
she got it?
To the John McCain position.
The voters clearly demonstrated
clearly
their...
That was a few votes. That was a close one.
Clearly, as I like to say, clearly...
She, though, and I'm not sure if that's a great move politically, but she is the real deal. I mean, she led a squadron. She's I'm not sure if I like it for the same reasons you're saying, because she just lost.
Governor Doug Ducey will appoint fellow Republican Martha McSally to the Senate, he said.
Well, two women in the Senate from Arizona.
How about that?
Yeah.
But the bad news from my side, Arizona's in play in the presidential. I mean, Cinema One beat McSally, who was actually very popular. She had troubles early on, but that state's in play now.
All right, Pat, are you going to stick around for a minute? Do you have a minute? We want to talk to you about the Trump charity. There was news there today as well. We want to get to that. But first, let's check in with Judy Pilock, find out what's coming up in the top of the hour in the WGN News.
President Trump says there's nothing more important than protecting children.
I can't believe he did that.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Pilock from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. This is The Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Ro's taking the day off, so we have Richard Roper in studio. Pat Brady, the former chair of the Republican Party here in Illinois, is here. Just weighed in on General Flynn and the shocking courtroom drama there. Other news today, though, that we want to try to digest is the Trump charity has been forced to dissolve. The New York Attorney General says we're going to oversee the remainder and you're going to shut it down. What do you make of that move?
Yeah, to your investigation, that again was fake news until it came time to agree to settle it. And the allegations are pretty bad, the way that they use the foundation for their personal use for the campaign. Remember in Iowa when they did the veterans thing? We were over there, and they actually did end up paying out, but that was all foundation stuff. I think Lewandowski was involved in that.
He had to be basically pressed shamed by the Washington Post and others because they kept following up, because that was the time he wouldn't participate in the debate with the other 500 candidates, right? We're going to have a rally for veterans, and we're going to donate all this money, and then nothing
happened.
Never quite
got there. Yeah. I think, though, that one observation is the only people that won't be screaming about this one are the Clintons, because I always thought the Clinton Foundation had some problems, too. Nobody really looked at that one.
Right.
So these foundations
didn't get the scrutiny I think a lot of people thought.
Well, a lot of times, and I'm not excusing anyone, but, you know, you got your, you know, these giant names on these big foundations, and they're not going over the books. They're not dropping in on the offices, making sure that all the money goes where it should go, and they should be, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's if you're getting tax exemptions, then it should be scrutinized. But even beyond that, the inaugural committee now is under criminal investigation for what they did there. And that, to me, is always an area that's ripe for fraud, because I think the donations are unlimited to the inaugural committee.
They had like an insane amount of money in that inauguration war chest. And for the 416 people that showed up, that means they spent $25,000 per attendee.
Wow.
Although a lot of people did say there was a lot of Photoshop expense, you know, after the fact to make that crowd look bigger. So
can we have a complete list of who is not currently under investigation?
Well, his entire world is under investigation. Yeah. His entire financial world, his political world, his family is there's not. I don't think there's anything in his life that's not under.
Well, at least they'll always be able to fall back on Trump steaks and Ivanka's clothing line.
We'll see.
Oh, wait.
Pat Brady, thank you for joining us. Love
good
talking
to you.
Merry Christmas. Enjoy that warm climate you're going to. Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes. It is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is sitting in for Ro today, and we've got Tom Skilling, sponsored by Permaseal Basement Systems.
Nice.
And we are so happy. We get to speak to you every day, but today in particular, Tom. And you know why?
Why, Anna, you've heard the polar vortex.
I know.
Reports.
No, not just the polar vortex. But I woke up, and you know how you get these phone alerts. And then sometimes when you're just kind of trying to figure out what's going on in the day, you're just waking up, and you're barely there yet. You haven't had a cup of coffee. And the headlines, and I'm just going to read some of them. These are legitimate news sources, okay? The polar vortex could unleash a winter wallop by January. A punishing blast of cold on the way. The harshest winter in years. Scientists warn polar vortex to unleash its fury here soon.
I was really surprised. I started seeing those reports yesterday. It's hard to know how to respond to those. The fellow who's putting this out is a respected researcher out at MIT, a fellow by the name of Judah Cohen. And a couple of years ago, he put out this winter forecast. It was going to be cold from the Rockies eastward. It turned out to be warmer than average. But he looks a lot at Siberian snow cover, as do some of these long-range forecasters. You know something? I'll be honest with you. I've yet to see that work out.
How's that working out for you, doctor?
Honestly, you know, it's cited so often as, and of course, you know, if a scientist utters polar vortex, you know, it gets immediate headlines. But I'm not sure how many people are on board with that. And it has caught headlines. And perhaps he's onto something. He also looks at stratospheric warming, which has been shown to buckle the jet stream if it occurs in the right area.
What if this guy's got a clothing deal with one of those puffy coat places, Tommy? Or maybe he's got a clickbait clause in his contract with the university.
I'll tell you, Richard, I don't mean to denigrate the research he's done, because he's done some.
You've talked about him before on the show.
Yeah, sounds familiar.
Respect his work. But isn't the polar vortex what we used to call winter?
It is. Yeah, that's exactly right. I noticed the USA Today article made that comment, and it's very true. And look, here, I'll tell you what. When I saw that, I went scurrying to. We get these experimental 45-day runs of both the European Center's model and our National Weather Service runs one. So I looked at them, and I thought, wow, they're run twice a week by the European Center out to 45 days, and our National Weather Service runs what's called the CFS-2 model. It's a climate forecast system model. And then they run it 10 times and average the forecast, and it does not show the polar vortex coming down in January. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't going to be cold spells. I suspect there will be. And the fear I have is when one of these comes down, everybody's going to say, see that? That's the polar vortex. Look, January will produce some cold spells. But when all is said and done, I think, you know, that's pretty typical. And by and large, the consensus seems to be. Now, the European model does show a cold spell coming down, but its last run, 3 days ago, didn't show the cold spell. So I would urge caution in reading too much into this just yet. And we don't see.
Sounds like you're not buying it, Tom.
So, Tom, what you're saying is there's really cold air above the North Pole, and that causes other areas of the globe to get colder because of the cold air above the North Pole.
Richard, as usual, you have, boiled it down.
Shocking.
To its basics. I know.
He's
really
good at that.
By the way, look over there near the North Pole. It seems to
be cold over there?
And the air above it is even colder.
Gee. You know,
is he saying he detects some sense that it's already going to be it's going to be disrupted at that certain point? And can models predict that far out, Tom?
Well, you know what? We get general forecasts out to, you know, this 45-day period. What they do is they come up with predictions in 5-day blocks. And you smooth a lot of things out. I mean, we have no skill at predicting a particular snowstorm out at 45 days, nor do we have a lot of skill at a particular cold spell. I would say that, you know, there's a high probability we'll probably get a cold outbreak of some sort in January. But by and large, I'm not sure that's going to characterize the whole month. And I noticed the quote that appeared in a lot of these forecasts was this would be the most significant event of the winter, which sounds, you know, to a layperson like a pretty ominous prediction. Yeah. I'd be a little cautious about it, and I'd want to see just how things unfold, because they said some of these forecasts I've seen to that effect said it ought to be coming in the end of this month and January. And we're looking already to the end of this month, and there's a sign of a modest cool down at the end of 2 weeks. But by and large, that period, it'll be colder later this week, but still above normal. So I don't see any barbaric outbreaks just at this point. And I would fully expect we will have a pretty healthy cold spell at some point, but I'm not sure it'll characterize the rest of the winter, you know? It might be. Everything seems
again,
to be very
transient. Again, a cold
transient.
Spell in January in Chicago, right. Tom. Why do you have to hype everything up with that kind of madness?
Well, you know, the problem with these predictions is we're all taken down if they don't work out, you know? Right. Everybody says, you guys are
they lump you in with that, too.
Yeah. And I'd hold off on that. The thinking has been when the books are closed on this meteorological winter, it may average above average and temperature-wise. And look at the cold we had, you know, a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, that ran over a multi-week period. And people were saying, what happened to this warmer-than-average winter? Well, that wasn't the winter, first of all. And secondly,
Great point.
It's not over yet. You know,
we're still not in winter, quite.
No.
Right?
No. How does we're in meteorological winter, yeah, but you're right. Yeah. Not officially. That's right, Richard. That's yeah.
How does this kind of thing evolve, Tom, in your experience, to make such headlines like that? Is this something that among meteorologists and people who, scientists who study the weather, you're all sort of comparing notes, but then this one popped in such a big way, and part of it may be because he's so respected, as you point out.
Yeah.
But I wonder how this occurs, what your guess is on that.
Well, I think what happens is one media organization picks up on it, and then puts it out there, and everybody else investigates and says, hey, this is indeed what a researcher, respected researcher, is saying, so we'll go with it. But I think it's important, whenever you're talking about an extreme weather event, and we don't have a lot of skill at predicting those, we can look at general trends. We can tell you the planet's warming and likely to continue warming. There's strong evidence, almost irrefutable at this point, that that's going to happen, and it is happening. But that doesn't, what we don't have much skill at are the little superimposed cold spells or extreme warm spells that occur with this average pattern. And so I just urge caution whenever you hear a forecast that suggests that we're going to have an extreme weather event, which seems to be what's being hinted at here. And I would say that we probably will have a cold spell in January, but by and large, the bulk of evidence at this point seems to be that this isn't going to be anything other beyond the run of the mill type pattern. It's not going to characterize the rest of the winter.
Excellent. I'm going to get Ro off the ledge. He's been on.
Please do not mention.
So
do not mention. Do not mention the words polar vortex.
I'll leave notes for this radio program tomorrow.
We wouldn't even breach this. No, he doesn't need to know what we talked about.
It's all for his own good.
It's not really something to worry about yet anyway, is what I'm hearing from you, Tom.
No, that's right. I mean, we'll see it. If there's going to be a big outbreak of cold air, we'll see it. We don't see it yet I can see. Exactly. Just like we don't see a big snowstorm yet. There will be a windy storm later in the week. But a lot of its heaviest precipitation will be south and east of us. And, you know, the whole eastern U.S. is breaking year-to-date rainfall and precipitation records. I mean, it's been incredibly wet. So we're going to put another big rain in out there and take these records ever higher and probably break some other ones.
A week from Christmas, how does Christmas Eve and Christmas look right now?
You know what? There's one model that is suggesting, and it's been a kind of consistent forecast, that there might actually be a snow on Christmas Day. Not a huge thing. It's a little disturbance coming through, but that'd be kind of nice for the
like a little Christmas dusting? Or are you talking about...
Yeah. We're not great with numbers at that distance, but one thing I can tell you, it doesn't look like a major, blizzard. Yeah.
Well, last Christmas Eve, Tom and Ann, my car was spinning like I just won a NASCAR race. And I wasn't doing it on purpose.
Do you have real drive like me?
You know, it's a 68 Camaro muscled up, so it's probably not the best car for the winter.
Richard knows how to travel, doesn't he, Anna?
Yeah.
By the way, Anna, didn't you know when we did the first Roel, don't you think Richard was marvelous up there with the Ice of March?
Amazing. The two of you up there, we were just saying, was a magical moment on stage.
It was.
All of us felt the need to just draw back and take video of and then talk about it.
It was magical, all right.
It was magical. Honestly, the dance moves.
I told Richard, we take this on the road, it's going to crash and burn.
Oh my gosh. I'm not kidding, Tom. It was one of the highlights of my life to sing background with you, to share a microphone.
It was marvelous.
We had a wonderful time.
I had a great night with you. Really. I mean, honestly.
It really was
Tom,
special.
We all know you and love you and for what you do, but how gracious you were with everyone in that room.
Anna,
all 1,100 people literally wanted a picture with you, wanted a selfie with you, wanted to meet you. And at some point, it was like an hour later, like, where's Tom? He's still meeting with all the people that want to talk to him. You were so nice with your time.
I'll tell you something. Believe me, I was as thrilled having time to spend with you guys because we talk over this phone line every day, essentially.
Yes.
I'm out here in Bradley Place. You're downtown in the beautiful WGN studios. But it's fun to see you in the flesh.
It was fun to be close. To be together and dance on stage.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
It was.
We'll do it again, Tom.
All right, Anna, that sounds good. And guys, happy Tuesday to you.
And remember, no mention of polar vortex tomorrow.
I'm off tomorrow.
Oh, okay. So mention of it ever.
No, I won't. We'll keep it quiet and hope that tapes leak out or anything that.
Nope. Thank you. All right. Good idea. Thanks, thank you, Tom. We'll talk to you later.
Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday. We're going to check in with Judy Pilek, find out what's happening bottom of the hour in the WGN News.
A pastor and painter who transformed his suburban church. See the work of this Midwestern Michelangelo tonight on WGN TV News. That's at 9.
Very cool. We are here at the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper sitting in today for Ro. So we are about to get on with Alex Stone from ABC News. He's at that little outing in California. Elon Musk is throwing a party for his Hyperloop, and he's got a special guest list of aldermen, city officials, people gathering to check out the Hyperloop. They can get in a little pod, and they can get themselves vacuumed back and forth.
I know. I heard you're anti-vacuuming.
I don't like the feeling of being vacuumed.
No, that doesn't sound good. It sounds like something that happens in a sci-fi movie. You know?
Right.
And I can't wait to hear what the Stone Pony has to say about this thing. It will take you so quickly to O'Hare, you're actually gain 2 minutes. It's going to travel forward in time. It's such a bullet.
My plane was 2 minutes ago, but I'll still make it.
Yes, I can still make it as long as I take the train. And they're so whimsical. That whole group, there's a Monty Python reference we'll talk about that they even invoked for this thing, right?
Which they compare it.
They put a tower up like in Monty Python when where the guy yells insults, or the French yell insults down, and they're like, they built a Python-esque tower as part of the announcement. I'm like, well, that's so whimsical. How about the train? Are you going to build that?
Let's make sure we get that part right, okay, before we step
on. I wear Elon Musk, by the way. It's a wonderful nighttime fragrance.
We'll be talking ABC News about the Hyperloop coming up, but first, Judy Pilek News, sponsored by PermaSeal Basement Systems. This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeBlantis. Richard Roper is in today for Ro. He'll be back tomorrow. We've been talking about this Hyperloop, and it's the tunnel, you know, the tunnel, the super fast transportation from downtown to O'Hare that the billionaire Elon Musk proposed and ultimately won the bid here in the city to get it started.
This is the Boring Company, right?
The Boring Company. Mm-hmm. All started with the tweets. 2 years ago, almost to the day, traffic driving me nuts, Elon Musk tweeted. I'm going to build a tunnel boring machine and just start digging. Normally, that could be just a frustrated driver, a guy caught in traffic.
Levels, Jerry, all levels.
But this is a billionaire entrepreneur who sends things into space. So suddenly he's the real deal and we're all invested. In fact, certain people from Chicago, some aldermen and city officials are out there to check out the test tunnel. Also out there, Alex Stone, our ABC correspondent, who's out there on the scene. Alex, what do you know about this? What's happening so far?
Well, guys, as you mentioned, this was kind of like one of those harebrained ideas that somebody says, man, traffic blows. I'm just going to build a tunnel and dig underground. And Elon Musk actually did it. But I mean, that's kind of his history as well, whether it be with SpaceX or with Tesla, that he kind of thinks it would be cool. And he decides that, okay, this is what he's going to do. Now, this tunnel may play a...
It always happens at right this moment.
Because he's in a tunnel.
Is he in the tunnel?
He's in the model for the tunnel.
Alex, we lost you. Are you able to... Oh, we're going to get Alex back on the line. So but it's fascinating.
The idea of this tunnel, Anna, is like... And Elon Musk, there was a press conference where he said this could happen sooner rather than later. It would cost a quick billion, but it would be privately funded, right?
Yeah, no taxpayer money is the promise, because that's the immediate question, of course. How much is it going to cost?
And it does, as Alex says... It feels like Elon Musk just stocked up on old episodes of the Jetsons, and everyone's like, ooh, an electric car, ooh, SpaceX, ooh, this tunnel, because you'd be in this pod, and the wheels, so to speak, would be like on the side of it, like, because you'd be in a tunnel.
You'd be levitating, hockey.
Yeah.
Like you play air hockey, and you know how the puck kind of levitates? That's how the people
would. And it would shoot you from downtown to O'Hare in, 12 minutes?
Something like that.
11 minutes. I was reading one story about this where they said the normal commute from downtown to O'Hare is 35 minutes, and I'm like,
when
Jesus walked and there were no people
on Saturday
the world?
At 7 a.m.? I mean,
it's never 35 to 40 minutes.
Not that I've seen.
Including the CTA, of course, because that, it has so many stops, right?
Even though it's convenient and it goes right into the terminal there, it's hard. to, you know, if you're in a hurry, it's not necessarily the right answer. Alex Stone is rejoining us now. Alex, go ahead and finish what you're saying. We lost you right there at the beginning.
Yeah, well, now we know that cell service inside the tunnel is not great, right? No, it
it's got to improve that.
This goes back to 2016 when, you think that wasn't that long ago, December 2016, the birth of a boring company when Elon Musk pretty much said that he is tired of traffic in L.A. and he wants to find some way around it. The way he found was to dig under and created the Boring Company, which at first, you know, people laughed even at the name that he said, why does it take so long to build a tunnel when he says there's got to be better technology out there and we're going to do it and we're going to do it quickly. And that's what he's been doing. They started, I was at the SpaceX complex right around that time when right outside of the headquarters, they started digging a tunnel. And that is a tunnel that they are now completing. Now, this tunnel is probably going to eventually play a role in Hyperloop. But what this is not the Hyperloop tunnel. This is that you would drive your car onto a platform. It would lower your car down into the tunnel. And then you would stay in your car. And on this platform, it would zoom you where you want to go. Now, you'd go a heck of a lot faster than you would go driving, but you would be in your car and not in a capsule like you would be with Hyperloop. And he says that, yeah, we're going to be able to go all around L.A., go all around other cities eventually by using this system instead of using roads up on the surface.
Well, Alex, it's interesting, too, because they're saying in Chicago, Elon Musk said this could, you know, be built in 2 years. And it's like, have you met Chicago construction? We have construction going on expressways named for presidents who were still alive when the construction started on
so
them.
True.
So, you know, as always in Chicago, we greet this thing, this type of announcement and this type of plan with a great deal of skepticism if it's ever really going to happen.
And this is
you have to greet anything time-wise that Elon Musk says with that skepticism, because his timeline is always way off from what it ends up being, because, you know, he says, look, he's excited, and he goes with the, well, we could do it in this amount of time, and then it ends up being longer. That said, what he is able to do is very different than any traditional construction company can do. That they did put this machine into the ground, and this first tunnel really goes nowhere. It goes from outside of the SpaceX headquarters to essentially across the street, down the street, and comes back up out at a vacant lot. But this is all for a demonstration to show that they can do it. In real life, they would have to deal with utility companies and getting in the way of things that may be a little bit deeper in the earth than what they did in this tiny test area. And most people in L.A. didn't even know this was going on. Yeah, they've heard about it. They know that he was planning on doing it, but they came up with a system to get the dirt out of there, to make the noise relatively low. The vibration was low. The people were coming and going in that area not knowing what was going on down below. And he says that's what the Boring Company is all about, and that eventually that there would be these entrance areas all over the city. You would drive up. It would lower you down on an elevator. He's going to show that off tonight as well, these elevators. And then in your car, you would sit on this platform, and then it would take you down that tunnel. But very different than Hyperloop, which would be that you get into a pod, and it's a tighter tunnel, and then that zooms you at incredibly quick speeds. They've got one of those test tunnels already along the SpaceX the test center, and they've been testing that tunnel as well. This would be a little bit different, but both of them would be very quick technology.
Hyperloop has that. That's the one that we'd be getting here, Chicago to O'Hare.
The pods.
Yeah, that's where eventually you would sit in a pod, and it would take you, you know, like you got into a high tech taxi, and it would take you through the tunnel. Versus sitting in your car and just being on little platforms that roll you around in these tunnels.
How does the car attach?
You just pretty much drive onto it, and then you go down in the elevator, and then, you know, you're on this platform, and it's on a sort of track inside the tunnel. I mean, the tunnel would be you go one place at this point. That if you get on here in L.A. at Dodger Stadium and you get out in South L.A. at the USC campus, that's where the tunnel goes. And it's meant to get you under traffic, and you could come up in certain areas. You could decide almost like a subway line that you want to get off at certain stops, but otherwise you would be going where that tunnel goes.
So it'd almost be like, you know, the channel, so to speak, where you can go, you know, from Paris to London.
Mm-hmm.
Alex, you mentioned taxis. Of course, I'm assuming it's too early, but has there been any talk about what it would cost? Because I know in Chicago, if this actually happened, if you could get from downtown to O'Hare in 12 minutes, there will never be an empty seat on that. And I think they could charge a pretty penny. Has there been any discussion what it would cost someone to take that that tunnel to downtown, from downtown to O'Hare?
No, not really. And he's already had to ditch a plan for a second test tunnel that he was planning to do. There was another tunnel that the homeowners in the area said, absolutely not. You're not digging under our homes. They have bought at least one home, if not more, so that they can have the land to try to test this out. But he's got plans that this is going to be very quick, but it's likely going to go on longer than what he's saying it may go on. There are all kinds of, you know, Uber not that long ago announced they were going to have flying taxis by the end of 2019 all around L.A., where you landed these automated pods with nobody flying them, that they would fly themselves. I don't see any indication that we're going to have these autonomous taxis flying all over just yet in the next year or so. So if this ever happens, where really it would be more than this test tunnel and a pipe dream, who knows? But he says, Elon Musk says, it's definitely happening, and that he thinks the technology with the Boring Company is here.
You say that it is, it'll be cheaper than a cab ride. Roughly, it's $25, according to Crane Chicago Business here locally, for the Chicago to the airport. They're saying it's obviously so cheaper than most other modes of transportation. I suppose your car is cheaper, or
there'll
train,
be ticket
the
brokers selling those. If it comes to $25,
on the Hyperloop and the capsules. Yeah, they've got plans for that. But for what they're planning, where you would drive your car into this tunnel, he says he hasn't even thought
no
about
idea.
That yet.
Okay. No idea. But what about, they say that it's better for the environment, all of this. Is that an argument you buy?
Well, I mean, yeah, I guess you're not driving, so there's no exhaust coming out, if you know, unless you're in a Tesla. Mm-hmm. And there are, I don't know about Chicago, but here in L.A., about every third car is a Tesla right now. And so, you know, you wouldn't have to charge your car, so that would be a benefit as well, if it's dirty energy coming in there. Overall, anything you could make the argument that isn't driving, that if you're not putting exhaust out, if you do have a gas-powered vehicle, that you're helping out the environment.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Alex Stone. So tonight, what time does everybody get on the test tunnel? What time does that happen?
8 o'clock tonight, Pacific time. So what, 6, 8, 9, 10 your time? We'll find out what this tunnel is really all about.
Okay. And then is this the very first human test of the tunnel? I mean, what were they offering up there?
Yeah. How functional this tunnel is actually going to be tonight, we don't know. It really looks like it's going to be more of just that we're finally going to get to see this tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
And to see, his big thing is showing off what his boring equipment was able to do, that what the Boring Company can do. This is less about the technology of what you'll be able to do in your car tonight, and more about how quickly, in only a couple of years, he was able to dig underneath LA, even though it's a fairly short stretch, and that he was able to do it and successfully come out the other end. That's what he wants to show off tonight.
All right. Well, we're hoping to have someone who is part of that test, one of the Chicago officials out there testing it out on the show tomorrow. So thank you for bringing us up to speed today, Alex. Alex Stone, ABC News. We appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. I wonder if they'll get the chance to feel like what it's like to be vacuumed. I don't like that suction cup feel that I sort of understand that it's going to be. But, you know, you don't know. Well, we'll see. We're going to hear from someone on the program tomorrow, hopefully, to see how it all went. Let's check right now with Judy Pilak, see what's coming up top of the hour in the WGN News.
Bunting hanging outside the 5th District Chicago Police Station.
You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's not love. That's 3 feet above your
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
This is the Ro Khan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper in for Ro today. My favorite tweet on Penny Marshall today, Ava DuVernay, fellow Fierce Femme director. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Penny Marshall, for the trails you blazed, the laughs you gave, and the hearts you warmed.
Wow. Beautiful.
Isn't it? Oh,
yeah. Penny Marshall, 75, died of complications from diabetes. I don't know if people realize that she was, I didn't know that she was That's sick. And wonderful woman. People, of course, remember her on Laverne and Shirley, but then became this accomplished film director. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's the 30-year anniversary, Anna, of Big, which is another great Tom Hanks movie.
Such a good movie.
And that was the first movie ever directed by a woman to gross more than $100 million. So
and
trailblazing and also very commercially successful. She did a movie called Jumpin' Jack Flash with Whoopi Goldberg, which is actually a really cool film. Awakenings, which was multiple Academy Award mm-hmm. nominated, and the scene you just heard there, A League of Their Own. A lot right. of people don't realize, I think, that you know that was her directorial touch there. Tom Hanks and Madonna and Gina Davis, everybody knows about the stars of it, but that's a film. It was just on the other day, and it's a great tribute to the women who kind of stepped up during the war era mm-hmm. and filled a void for more baseball to be played here stateside.
You know, she was a tremendous director, tremendous career, and as an actress, you think about, I mean, Laverne and Shirley is how she will be remembered. Mm-hmm. Those reruns are still everywhere. The times you laughed, and you can see those over and over again. And there's something special about her, because I remember growing up as a kid and watching the show and watching the reruns, and she just was this quirky tomboy, this woman yes. who didn't fit any real Hollywood stereotype, who was her own kind of person.
She really was.
And she owned that, and she just made you laugh, and she was so
that's
funny.
A great point. She talented. Was on the red carpet with gym shoes 30 years before Ellen. I mean, just I'm gonna dress the way I dress, and she was a talented filmmaker. And you think about what comes out of that with the kind of Happy Days universe, because Ron Howard went on to become a great director.
True, right.
And of course Gary Marshall, who was Penny's older brother, was the creator of those shows. And she was married for a long time to Rob Reiner, who, of course, was yeah. on All in the Family, but went on to become and still is one of our great directors. Mm. All of these people and many more that are still with us, those including Rob Reiner, have tweeted out some really beautiful, heartfelt messages today about Penny Marshall.
Absolutely. When she became, Richard, remind me, when she became a female director of League of Her Own and the other films she directed, there couldn't have been that many other women.
I mean, to this day, it's still about maybe 10% of major motion pictures are directed by women. Back then, you could count them on two hands. I think there were seven working on a regular basis when Penny Marshall joined the ranks. I mean, in all of Hollywood, directing motion pictures, 5, 6, 7 women, that was it.
Truly,
And she proved that, first of all, of course a woman could do anything a man could do, often better. But also, as I mentioned, she had a good eye for good material, but also commercially successful mm-hmm. movies, which is all Hollywood eventually cares about, ultimately yep. cares about.
We've got Judy's News coming up in 2 minutes, then a top five at five you won't believe. Stay with us for more. This is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis, Richard Roper in for Ro today. And we were talking earlier, just a few minutes ago, about Penny Marshall, her sad passing, accomplished director and actress, 75 years old. Keith Richards, by the way, just turned 75 today.
Wow.
Interesting that...
His blood, though, only 17 months, so...
I know. We thought he died a few times in his life, but he's still with us, and he's doing okay. So good for Keith. It is time, that special time of day, because yes. if you look at the clock, you look at your phone, you know it's just after 5 o'clock, and that can only mean one thing. One thing.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Okay. Okay. We will. Checking in at...
Number five.
Thank you, Orion. President Trump took part in a roundtable discussion on school safety today at the White House. The president hosted two parents of students who were killed in the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas school shooting, who joined members of Trump's School Safety Commission, discussing the findings in a report released by the commission. Now, President Trump said he thinks that arming teachers is an essential element to providing a safe school environment.
Horrible carnage takes place in a very short period of time. That is why it's critical to have armed personnel available at a moment's notice. These are people, teachers in many cases, that are the highest trained that you can get. Nothing is more important than protecting our nation's children.
Just keep clinging to that insane idea.
keeps coming back to that. But that's not all. He also said he's in favor of a partial gag policy. This gag policy he's talking about, which it would discourage media from reporting certain elements of mass shootings.
Launching a no notoriety campaign, which would encourage the media not to use the names or, frankly, anything having to do with the shooters. They make these people famous, and they're not famous. They're the opposite. They're horrible, horrible people.
You saw that here in Chicago with the gangs, because the police for a while, in the media, we reported the gang, which gang was responsible for which shooting and who shot who, and that was being reported for some time, and then you saw that stopped. You didn't do that because you thought you were giving them notoriety or some sort of
turning it into modern day
fame.
You know, Jesse James, or, you know, it's still to this day. I know it's been a long time, but the idea that Al Capone is some sort of cartoon character and there should be tours and stuff. He was a horrible murderous thug. But in this case, Anna, we have a new United States president saying, A, we should arm teachers, and B, the media should be silenced. And I understand about, first of all, they don't glorify the shooters. And a lot of the times when that information is being released, the names of the suspects or the apprehended, that's valuable information.
Absolutely.
That often leads to citizens and neighbors calling in and saying, you know, that guy, Boston Bombers, for example, you know, hey, that guy had a friend I knew about, or here's what you should look at. Oh, by the way, this is where he worked. And, you know, all that information. That's why the media is reporting that. They're not doing the same, they'll profile the, I mean, look, there's a special on right now about John Wayne Gacy. I don't need to see any more about him. Mm-hmm. And I get that. You know, sometimes they do glorify in some ways, or at least make them, you know, famous, and they shouldn't be, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, immediately after the crime, I agree with you. There are a lot of reasons why you want that name to get out, and people know things. People ultimately will come forward and help the investigation, help build a stronger case or show of a history of this kind of activity.
The sad thing is, Anna, there have been so many of these mass shootings that if you ask the average person, what is the name of the Las Vegas gunman? What is the name of the Sandy Hook killer? They can't tell you. We remember the names of John Wayne Gacy and Richard Speck and Charles Starkweather and all these long time ago because they were relatively isolated incidents. Mm-hmm. We don't remember the names of these horrible, horrible evil
killers.
People.
Yeah.
Killers.
Yeah. It's very sad. Sad but true. Checking in at
Number four,
Sarah Huckabee Sanders. She took to the podium today.
What's it to you?
And it was minutes, not that long after the General Flynn appeared in court today. Mm. So there was a bit of a delay when things didn't work out exactly as people had suspected in that situation, or as expected. Her press briefing, it was her first press briefing, we should say, since November
27th. Yeah, MIA lately.
Yeah, she addressed a number of questions from the press corps, many of which focused on Michael Flynn's sentencing hearing. And while the sentencing was delayed to mid-March, Flynn refused to retract his guilty plea of lying to FBI agents and earned a harsh rebuke from Judge Sullivan. CBS News Stephen Portnoy came straight from the Flynn hearing, marched over to the White House for the briefing, and he had something to say about asking Flynn's cooperation in context with Trump's former attorney, Michael Cohen, who President Trump dismissed as a rat.
Is there a particular reason why the president has not said that he is a rat, the way that he has said that Michael Cohen is a rat for cooperating with Russia?
Look, we know Michael Cohen to be a liar on a number of fronts, and the president's opinion is extremely clear on that front. I don't see any reason to go beyond that comment at this point.
As usual, not answering the question.
We haven't missed
a thing in a month, have I, boys?
There is a bonus cut here. I'm sure you'll.
Oh, yay.
I guess I'm wondering, using terms like rat and things like that to talk about people who are cooperating witnesses with the FBI.
Or people who are dishonest and lying.
Does he not have a broader responsibility to preserve confidence in the rule of law for the American people?
Certainly, and that's why he has appointed new people to help do exactly that, whether it's Director Wray, a new attorney general, somebody that can come in and be very transparent throughout this process.
Yes, a lot to take in there. James Comey was also asked about it today, and he said that, say that again to yourself, you've got the president calling his own, you know, he's calling people rats when there's an active investigation going on. It just, it's a little jarring, frankly.
It's gangster terminology.
We have one more bonus cut, just one more here. Here
oh, good.
Go. Mm-hmm.
Should he not be speaking on behalf of the American people, not just himself President Trump man under investigation. But, you know, in all these aspects, you're talking about saying that he is just speaking for himself and he's not been linked to collusion is the claim, and therefore, he, you know, it doesn't matter what he says. And the same thing with
That's
the Fed,
not what I said at all.
That his comments on the Fed have no bearing. He's just giving his opinion. What about him
I didn't
speaking
say they
to
have
the
no
American
bearing.
People?
I said he's the president of the United States, and he should not only does he have the ability to give his opinion, he should give his opinion. That's why the people elected him, is because they trusted him to make decisions on policy matters. They want to know what his positions are on specific policies. He absolutely should state his opinion on not just that, but on every topic that comes up that he wants to engage on.
All right. Anything to say on that, Richard, before we move on?
I just like to say that she actually sounds like she's saying, like, I don't understand why you're all asking me these questions just because I'm standing at a podium and you're facing me. Why are you asking me things?
A lot of questions today, as you might imagine. We're going to check in, move on to
number three.
Oh, we have to break here before we do number three. So that was a bit premature. I'm very sorry about that.
Sorry about that.
We'll get back to your three, your two, your one in just a minute. But let's check in with Judy Pilak, find out what's coming up bottom of the hour in the WGN News.
Did Flynn sell his country out?
It's the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. We have one more thing here. Hey, Bulls fans, enter for your chance to win the ultimate VIP Bulls night experience. ChicagoTribune.com/Bulls Quiz, courtesy of the Chicago Tribune. Rose taking the day off, so Richard Roper is here with us, and we're in the middle of the top five at five, and let's go ahead and check in at
number three.
Rolling Stones guitarist Keith Richards turned 75 years old today. Richards co-wrote nearly all the band's classic songs with Stones frontman, you know him, you love him, Mick Jagger.
Greatest rock and roll band of all time.
Gotta be.
They'll be right here in Chicago to kick off summer. June 21st, Soldier Field.
Soldier Field. Love
concerts.
Yeah,
I think they got a couple of shows.
Field.
But the 21st. And then, you know, here's the great thing about the Rolling Stones. They used to play like three shows or five shows in a row. They're going to play Friday, June 21st. Take a nap, and then they'll be back on Tuesday the 25th. So they throw about 3 days in between.
Their concerts are now at 10 a.m. It's so strange.
But they're still great live. If you haven't had a chance to see them, go see them. It's amazing.
I'd love to. Yeah. Let's put that on the calendar.
Yeah, let's go.
Checking in at
number two.
Cardi B joined James Corden for his latest carpool karaoke. Discovered by Steve Cochran, by the way. He takes credit for carpool karaoke. Last night on the late show, the pickup had the Bronx-born rapper talking about her rise to fame. Who's Cardi B?
How did you get people to play your music, to play your songs?
By doing good music and not stopping, because at first people didn't want to play my music on the damn radio. A lot of these DJs were sleeping on me, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I had to keep on making music until I find the right one that's going to make them catch their eyes on me. Because, you know, I'm funny.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, you know what I'm saying? So people just be thinking that everything is a joke, and it's like, yeah, but I'm not laughing today. I want you to take this serious. But they wasn't, though. They was fronting on the kid, you're...
Oh,
You know what? What I love about her is, like, some people, they, you know, they burst to stardom and they kind of deny or refute or dismiss their past. And she's the same person, you know. And I believe someone out there is going to write a supporting movie role for her. And she's going to be in a movie, and she's going to be hilarious in the movie sometime soon.
She's going to make that crossover, you see.
Yes. Like, if you can write tailor that character, you don't even, you know, just write that character, and she'll be the wisecracking best friend of Tiffany Haddish in a Paul Feig comedy.
You can feel it. It feels like she almost came out of nowhere, and boom, she's about her all the time, and it is her. She's got this great personality.
Amazing.
She's kind of everywhere. Yep. She also, in that segment, took over a senior citizen center and got everybody to dance to her music, and it was really awesome. If you have a chance to check that out, it'll make you smile. All right, checking in at
number one.
Actress, director Penny Marshall has died complications from diabetes. She's best known for starring role Laverne and Shirley. Laverne DeFazio, she played in the hit TV show Laverne and Shirley.
Hey, Laverne, spin it around. Let me see you.
Yeah, yeah, you got the best L's in town.
What are you doing on this side of the tracks? Your bike break down?
No, I just came to look over the bells of bottle capping. You know what I'm talking about? You girls kill me.
I think he wants something, Cheryl.
You know, that's what I like about you. You're not only beautiful, you got brains, you know that?
So that was the setup, right, on Henry Winkler, right, as the Fonz. So Happy Days was set in Milwaukee, and then he went over and saw his old friends Laverne and Shirley with the iTorg, you know, giving them a spin-off show, which eventually became number one in its own right on TV. Back in the day, we're talking like 30 million viewers a week for that show.
Unbelievable. So good, all of them. Just great comedic timing she had, too. Just made you laugh. She's also a successful director, and her resume included the hits A League of Their Own, The Preacher's Wife, Awakenings, and Big, which starred Tom Hanks as a boy who turns into adult overnight and gets a job as an executive at a company that makes toys.
I don't get it.
What exactly don't you get?
It turns from a building into a robot, right?
Precisely.
Well, what's fun about that?
Well, if you had read your industry breakdown, you would see that our success in the action figure area has climbed from 27% to 45% in the last 2 years. There, that might help.
Oh.
Yes.
I still don't get it.
What?
What don't you get, Josh?
Well, there's a million robots that turn into something. And this is a building that turned into a robot. So what's fun about playing with a building? That's not any fun.
This is a skyscraper.
Well, couldn't it be like a robot that turns into something like a bug or something?
A bug?
Yeah. Like a big prehistoric insect with maybe like giant claws that could pick up a car and crush it like that.
A prehistoric transformer?
Interesting.
Gentlemen,
so the robot turns into a bug.
Gentlemen, listen to him.
He's got a very good idea here.
You love it. I mean, they say your career really turned a corner with the movie Big. And
yeah, 30 years ago, summer of 1988, it was a huge hit. She became the first director to helm a $100 million grossing film. Paved the way for, and a lot of female directors, including Ava DuVernay today, paying tribute to what she did and what she meant to them.
Yeah, absolutely blazed that trail. Penny Marshall was 75.
The top five at five.
It's the Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. Richard Roper is in with us today. And Richard, it is the season of giving. So what are we going to do? We give. We're going to give and give and give. And right now, be caller number 19, 312-981-7200. Win a Chicago Blackhawks prize pack, including an autographed puck, a new era Seabrook designed hat, much, much more. Check out the Chicago Blackhawks Hockey House pop-up. It's now open, located just south of the Blackhawks store on Michigan Avenue. You know the place. The pop-up is open to all fans throughout the month of December, leading into the Winter Classic, when the Blackhawks take on the Boston Bruins. Original Six matchup, Notre Dame Stadium, no less. Dying to go to that. The Hockey House is filled with one-of-a-kind team exhibits, exclusive Blackhawks Winter Classic merchandise, much more to check out. They have everything there. It's really cool. The hours of operation will mirror the Blackhawks store. Additional details can be found at chicagoblackhawks.com. And I know I want to ask you something about the White Sox, because there's a lot of buzz around the Southsiders, but really quickly, I want to check in. Corey Crawford and Andy Mazur, you know, we saw the nasty hit he took in the game.
Yeah.
A lot of concern about him personally right now, less about hockey, but more about his overall health right now, his family. He's got a one-year-old son, and just any word on how he's doing?
No, yeah. Well, Jeremy Colleton, the head coach, was asked about him today, and no news, I guess, is good news in this case, that he's just resting. And, you know, hopefully it's not as severe as it looked. But again, you know, it's the second concussion in less than a calendar year. And if anybody knows about this, and not a lot of people are talking about this, Jeremy Colleton's NHL career came to an end because of two concussions within a year.
I did not know that.
Yeah, he was talking a little bit about it today and said, listen, it was probably time to get smart for him. And he chose to get into coaching, into the front office. But with Crawford, you know, he's a competitor. And at the same time, it took him that long to try to get back from everything that happened last year. 47 games he missed. He missed a couple of games to begin this year. And then this happens again. And it's the most freakish kind of thing that could ever happen on a hockey, on an ice, on a rink. Because it was not only contact from two players, but he hit the back of his head on the post.
Pretty frightening to just
chilling, yeah.
To see that video, and we hope for the best with Corey, and we'll keep everyone posted because I know a lot of people concerned about him. But switching gears a little bit on the White Sox, a lot of excitement around the Southsiders, Richard, and I know you're one of them. And tell us what you know.
Knows more about baseball than any of us, but
he does.
I'm going to give you my crazy fan perspective on this, Andy, and tell you a couple of reasons why I believe that all this talk is actually going to lead to action, and the White Sox are not going to only get Bryce Harper, but also Manny Machado, and make the biggest free agent splash you've ever heard of. Of course, everybody knows they got Yonder Alonso, who is best buddies and brother-in-law with Manny Machado. He's got a little pop in his bat as well. But here's the thing. Jerry Reinsdorf is, what, Andy? 82, I believe.
Okay. Right.
And Jerry Reinsdorf has always famously said that, you know, even when he had the 6 NBA titles, he'd trade him for 1 world championship, which he got. He's always been a baseball guy. He's from Brooklyn originally. You know, baseball's always been his first love. I think Jerry Reinsdorf recognizes that the Bulls are not going to be NBA championship contenders, probably, you know, in the near future, maybe in his lifetime. And he sees a chance with the White Sox to make an immediate splash. They have a very low payroll, as Andy knows. They could actually do it. And they're in a division also, like, you know, if they add those two superstars, and there's still a lot of pieces in place, but you look at all the young players, they're instant contenders to be in the postseason next year, Andy. So how about that? What do you think?
I like it.
You like that theory?
I like the theory because, you know, as Richard said, they have the cash.
And no, wait. We're talking major cash here. Like what?
$30 million
a
piece, probably. Andy?
Easily, yeah.
But they
can
do it. They could, for 4 years. They have the room, as Andy says. They have the room to do that. And yeah, you look at Bryce Harper. You go, okay, this guy. You know, he's obviously had a great career. But we talked about Corey Crawford. You know, Bryce Harper's one of those guys who's kind of a young old, like like Kobe Bryant. You know, played a lot and gets hurt a lot in the field. Now he can be a designated hitter. You know, for maybe 50 games, he's in the number two market in terms of, you know, getting his profile even higher. It's a team and an organization that he looks at. You know, I know Andy knows this. You know, his agent shows him detailed reports on the farm systems of all the teams he's looking at, like who's going to be good 2 years from now, and you know all of that appeals to him. And now, obviously, if one of the guys goes, the other guy's more likely to go. Wait a minute, you know? Can you imagine? Now all of a sudden, you got two guys capable of hitting 40 home runs with Abreu and everybody else in that lineup.
So, if you could pick one, though, and I know everyone's playing this game. Who do you guys pick? Because I mean, I think it'd be crazy if they got them both.
I want to hear Andy's answer first. That's a great. Which one of the two? You can only have one.
I would go with Bryce Harper.
Me too.
I would go with Bryce Harper.
Why? Even,
I'll jump in, Andy, and you could say, I would say, and each of them have their unique personalities, but Bryce Harper's, I think, more about being a competitor, and Manny Machado's sometimes about being a jerk.
Yeah, it's not, you know, I think he got, Yonder Alonso tried to clear a little bit of that up yesterday with the conference call because, they are tight and brother-in-laws and they're neighbors in Miami. And he said that kind of gets, kind of got blown out of proportion because it was the playoffs and everything was kind of centralized on Manny Machado. He said that this guy wants to win.
Yeah.
So okay. I believe him. I mean, I believe a guy that's close to a guy that will tell us that. But at the same time, I think Harper is still a little more young at heart, so to speak. And, can certainly help you not only offensively, but defensively.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he is a five-tool player. One of the top five or six in the whole game when he's clicking on all cylinders.
How about Harper in right and Eloy Jimenez in left?
Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. And all of a sudden, things get really exciting on the south side.
And you and I can platoon in center.
There you go.
When do we get to know? When is the answer arriving?
You know, it's hard to say because Machado is on a little free agent tour right now. He's said to visit the Yankees today and then the Phillies tomorrow, I believe. And then after that, it's just I kind of feel like because Machado and Harper have agents who are kind of at each other's throat every once in a while, that one wants the other to sign first so that the other one can set the market.
I think you're absolutely right about that.
So
it's a game
I think,
of chicken right now.
Yeah, when the first domino falls, I think a lot will fall after that, just kind of. Yeah, you find out what how many years at $30 million or $35 million will satisfy one guy, and maybe you go 36 for an extra year, and you get the other guy.
Just think about that. The White Sox get hot, and this could be remarkable. And you got the Bears where they are, and I mean, the city is just
You know, Anna, you talked about the Winter Classic. You know, usually, you know, that first week of January, everyone's coming back from the holidays, and sports in Chicago is kind of like, it's like no, the Bears will be in a playoff game that first weekend in January. The
right?
Blackhawks will be playing in the Winter Classic at Notre Dame, we'll be right around the corner from the White Sox fan convention, and that would be a riot.
If
you get a Harper and a White White Sox jersey or a Machado meeting the fans, in addition to all the young guys they already have.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing because, you know, like you say, January is usually a dull month around here. And
it is.
It's not going to be that way. And if you don't believe it, I even said this during a sportscast today, if you didn't believe it after Sunday, Bears playoff tickets go on sale Thursday.
How about that? As I told everybody at the beginning of the year, Andy, I knew they'd have a better record than the Patriots at this time of the year.
Yeah, of course. Everyone thought that.
And the Bulls, of course, will be having outdoor practices the first week in January, so that'll be fine.
We thought Tom Brady would be pressing to try to get into the playoffs and that the Bears would be there. No problem.
Oh, yeah, no problem.
But didn't we think the Bears would have more wins than the Bulls at this time of year?
That's amazing.
What do we think tickets are going to go for a playoff game for the Bears?
Ooh, the numbers have been pretty high
those
already.
Those are pretty big.
Because the game tickets have surged this year to the point where they're pretty.
I'll give folks my long-range tip. Look at the second weekend in January right now.
Okay.
Look at the L.A. Rams, who will be hosting a game. Most likely, very likely, could be the Chicago Bears. Uh-huh. You might be able to get tickets to that game plus your airfare right now, and you'll be in Los Angeles for the second weekend of the year to see the Bears play at Los Angeles.
Boy, that is a pro tip. Why didn't I tell everybody that?
I should have bought 20 tickets, and then I could put it on the refrigerator here at WGN. Hey, anybody need two? Let's talk.
You're right.
Well, it's a good tip, too, because if you watched the Monday night game the other night, there were more Philadelphia fans there than Rams fans.
I mean, well, plus, are there really those LA fans.
But they're
are there LA fans of the Rams? Do they care about football
there's
there?
There's a few.
As Andy knows, it's always been that way. Right now, the Dodgers have this rabid fan base, but because they've been winning. But that goes away, and they start all leaving in the sixth inning again. Mm-hmm. And the football franchise, there's a reason why they come and go in Los Angeles because too many people in October are like, I'm going surfing. It's 78 degrees.
I went to one of the Dodgers-Cubs games when they were in the playoffs, and you're right about the ticket. The ticket numbers did not compare to what you would have paid for Wrigley. It was much more affordable. And you're probably right. If you get a good L.A. ticket, you throw it in there. You roll it in. And
bigger stadium, too.
Deal.
Yeah.
It's a bigger stadium,
it's
more
a huge
seats.
Stadium. I was looking at the seat map. They're actually offering seats in the 71st row. There's no stadium in Chicago that has a 71st row.
Not legally, at least.
Yeah.
All right, guys. We are going to talk a little bit. We're going to take a break here to talk to Judy about what's coming up in the news. And also, we're going to circle back and talk about some new Illinois laws that are taking effect January 1st. And they are bound to affect you.
Oh, there's always some great ones in there. Right?
Some of them are so quirky and so weird. And there are 250 of them. Ooh. And they deal with schools and car seats and carnivals and cats and cell phones and just about anything that you can imagine. So that's coming up. But first, let's check in with Judy Pilak, find out what's coming up top of the hour in the WGN News.
A lot of no-goes today when it came to rocket launches.
Coming up, the stories that matter with Judy Pilak from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio. Rokan Show with Anna DeBlantis, Richard Roper in today, and a lot of new laws are going to be hitting the books, as they always are, January 1st. But it's always interesting to go through these laws, and we're going to do a few of them right now, just decide if it's a good law or a bad law, team. So we have to sort of go through it.
Okay.
Let's
tell
us.
Are you a good law or a bad law?
Or it's a bad law. Rear-facing child seats offer greater protection. Beginning January 1, toddlers age 2 and younger must be in one.
Boy, that's an early cutoff at 2. You're 2.5. You can now face forward, little Zoe.
Well, there are weight and height restrictions, though. Okay. So, yeah, it'll just depend.
So you're going to measure the toddlers when you get pulled over. All right.
Unstrap
this one.
They're going to have a scale and a tape measure.
You just learned to walk. Well, tell them to walk a straight line.
We like this one, or we're not so sure?
I don't know. Yeah, I mean, obviously, it's fire protection.
Active shooter safety drills. I think we're going to like this one. Every Illinois school must conduct at least one law enforcement-led shooter safety drill every year. It's kind of a sign of our times. It's sort of sad. Even kindergartners now, they're being exposed to this.
I'm shocked that is there a school left that hasn't had one yet?
Isn't that
exactly.
Crazy?
That's kind of
crazy. My kid's school does it.
I like the carnival rider.
This is a good one. Does the tilt-a-whirl operator have a criminal past, as you always suspected? To increase public safety, carnival companies now must conduct criminal background checks on all employees. What do you guys think of that one?
Have you ever seen a Stephen King movie? Yeah, good move.
That's a good law. Judy likes that one.
Wait until we talk about the upcoming Jennifer Lopez movie, Second Act, where she invents an entire resume to become a corporate executive.
This one I think you're going to like, Richard. And I like this one, too. And I've done this before. Help threaten pets. Police can now take temporary custody of dogs and cats exposed to weather conditions, likely to result in injury or death.
My only complaint with this is it shouldn't be temporary custody. They should have them forever.
They should take them because someone's leaving the pooch they're leaving them out in the bad weather.
Cat out.
You could tell we're all pet owners. Yes.
Well, and I love, don't you guys?
Great law. The death penalty for anyone who
right.
has it. Yeah.
And don't you love all the stories? You see those little stories like on Twitter about the state trooper or the cop or the rescue worker who finds the little kitten or the dog, and they never leave because someone always adopts the beautiful little animal yeah. from the station. They're like, and now state trooper Mindy has a new golden retriever, and it's always they're always those the animals are always better off. Anybody who leaves them out
in the freezing cold, right? Come on.
I mean, sometimes they're lost, you know.
Yes, and they can, yeah, that's
or
true.
Or they get lost,
but
they
then
jump
they better
a fence.
Have a tag. You should have a
that's
chip
exactly
or a
right.
tag, right?
Yeah, my heart breaks in my neighborhood because there's a poster, you know, there's a flyer that's been up for far too long about have you seen our pooch, and it was tagged and everything. And you hope that they just were so happy to get the dog they didn't take the flyers down. That's what I'm hoping
you hope
for.
So.
Right, or the dog will or cat will or the pet will come back in 2 years because they'll find their way back to their home.
Because
yeah.
you hear those stories too,
those
and they might travel 1,000 miles.
Right. And they, exactly.
They end up in Colorado mm-hmm. and they find their way home. So that's going to happen too.
When I walk my dog, I also teach him. Here, remember this corner? This is where you live.
Look around, okay? Yeah. Take a
he sniffs another dog's poop and then goes on his way.
He's not listening.
I hate to be like the bearer of like dropping the bad news, but like 71% of people who seen abuse in their homes with children saw it with the pets first. So, yeah,
it's true.
Okay, there's Debbie Downer.
It's always the first so sign that we always hear about. You know, the notorious killers, how they were you know, abusive to animals.
Yeah.
So this is
animals on the front lines.
Hate hearing that. Yeah. All right, here's another one, guys. Blaze Pink. Joins Blaze Orange as an official hunting color here in the state of Illinois. It's a hunting wardrobe law. We
Good.
Like this one?
Okay.
Why do we like this one?
I don't even
Is an
get
orange
it.
Okay?
Well,
you can wear orange when you're hunting.
Because it'll stand out, yeah. Because what are the colors in the forest or in a blind that are pink? Not too many, unless you're a big flamingo hunter, mm-hmm. and I don't think that's a big thing.
So I went running out at Medewin National Forest Preserve or National Park out near Wilmington. Years ago, wore all bright pink, blaze pink, because it was deer shotgun season, and I still decided to go and run through all of it.
Oh,
and as I was
makes it more interesting,
dangerous.
Up your times.
As I approached a man full body armor, had a shotgun out and stuff, I'm saying, "Runner back!" And he pulls out his earplugs and he looks at me and goes, "You know, you should really be wearing blaze orange." And I was head to toe in hot pink.
Oh!
And I was like, if you can't see the hot pink, you maybe shouldn't be out here shooting at deer right now because you're not going to see the blaze orange either.
So you already have the blaze pink ready to go.
Exactly.
Nice.
So
what deer would be wearing blaze pink? You're right. I mean, come on. But now you're included. So this okay. you like this. So this
blaze
is definitely
blaze orange.
Good deal.
It's a good law. We
also
like that
good
one.
For Bears games.
New moms have enough to deal with already. Nursing moms will be excluded from jury duty at their request.
Oh.
Great law.
Okay.
Yes, we like that.
It could be a little distracting.
I'm all
for that. That makes sense. That's
it
just
does.
Common sense.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Stopping gun violence before it happens. Family members or police who believe someone is a threat to themselves or others can go to court to ask a judge to temporarily remove any guns.
That's the best law on the books.
Yeah. And they also say a workplace can have a stalking law, so you can't go to a workplace. It used to be just home or you had to give a certain address, but the workplace as well. So a couple of good ones there. Thank you very much, Illinois lawmakers, for that. There's actually 253 of them. If you
want to 243 to go. We'll get to those after the first of the year.
After the first of the year when it actually matters. We're going to check in with Judy Pilot and get the news in 2 minutes.
I suspect, and I'm never incorrect, that you're far too old to give in to imagination. No, not yet. Some people like to splash and play. Can you imagine that? And take a seaside holiday. Can you imagine that? Too much glee leaves rings around the brain. Take that joy and send it down.
Kind of like the Emily Blunt as the Mary Poppins there. Love it. Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis and Richard Roper in today. And it's the kind of time of the year when movies are on the mind. People have a few days off.
Right.
I usually get to catch up on a lot of movies this time of year.
Yeah,
go to
great
the theater.
Time for the movies. And Mary Poppins Returns actually opens tomorrow. They're getting a jump on the big holiday weekend, Anna. So, and I know you have a daughter who I think
loves
will absolutely
Mary Poppins.
Love this. I think Gabby will love this. It's really cool. So here's the deal with Mary Poppins Returns, because I know some people are saying, well, you're just going to assume this is going to be a reboot. And it's not. It's a sequel. It actually follows up the events of the 1965 classic film. Ooh. And people say, well, then how can Emily Blunt play the role that Julie Andrews played? Well, first of all, it's not 50 years in the timeline of the movie, okay? It's, you know, it's 50 years since the movie came out. But it is a generation after. But Mary Poppins is magical. So she doesn't age. That's She's true. A magical nanny. She That's comes true. Out from the sky on an umbrella, people. Mm-hmm. She's not old. No. So that's the conceit there, but it is actually set. So the two children, George and Mary, the brother and sister who were raised, you know, helped raised by Nanny Mary Poppins because the family is going through all stuff. They're now grown-ups in this movie, and their children give a new Mary Poppins, Emily Blunt. And Emily Blunt can do everything. You know, she was in A Quiet Place earlier this year with her husband, John Krasinski, a horror film. Now she shifts gears, and she's a perfectly cast Mary Poppins.
Mm, you can hear it there.
Yeah, and you know what? You can also, I think, what you heard in that clip is that this film is so faithful to the music and spirit of the original. They don't use the same song. It's all original songs. It's all original stories. There are some recurring characters, and there are a lot of references to the first movie, but this is a new adventure for Mary Poppins and the Banks children, and Academy Award winners Colin Firth and Meryl Streep show up, and lots of other, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda
Does
has a big
role. Does he write
some
of the music, or he's
and he performs. I will say this, you know, we're going to talk movies later in the week, but I'm giving 3.5 stars to Mary Poppins Returns. My only, you know, kind of reservation, Anna, is it's well over 2 hours long. It's about 2 hours and 15 minutes.
Long time for a kid to
And when we were growing up, or when you watched it on TV over the years, Mary Poppins, well, there were a lot of commercial breaks. And it was Sunday night. You didn't want to go to bed.
Take a bathroom
break. School was Monday. Yeah, so you didn't mind it being long. I felt like it was a little long. There are a couple of numbers in the middle that seemed a little bit redundant. And I think young ones, 5 or 6 years old, might get a little antsy. But it is very family friendly. And you don't have to know the whole Mary Poppins story. And it is certainly going to keep the adults entertained.
Good. Entertaining for adults and the kids. You like that.
Yeah. The director, Rob Marshall, directed Chicago. He's a, you know, kind of a traditional director. It looks like a big screen musical put on film in a good way. So, and you have all the great technology, but the combination of live action and animation is very reminiscent of it, what it was like in the 60s, you know, and they did that on purpose. And I love the music. I love the message. I did a screening last night with our Windy City Live friends with Ryan and Val, where we gave away tickets.
Love them.
And it was really cool because before the movie, we did some like Mary Poppins trivia, and there were tons of little girls, you know, anywhere between about maybe the ages of 8, 9, and 12, 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd ask a trivia question about the first movie. They all knew it because they'd all seen that movie, and they were all so excited to see this one. And that's what I love about the Mary Poppins thing, too. We're talking, you know, three generations now of movie fans have, you know, have watched that and loved it. One of the most successful and decorated movie musicals of all time. You can't compare Julie Andrews and Emily Blunt. You can't compare, you know, Supercalifragilistic and Spoonful of Sugar to the songs.
Please tell me they have a Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
They have some great songs. I'll just say that. You know, but it's a standalone. And I think they did it. They were smart. You know, there was some talk about Julie Andrews doing a cameo, and she said herself, I don't want to make it about a gimmicky cameo by me. Emily Blunt is now Mary Poppins, and I love that. So good for her, too.
Good for her. 3.5 stars. And you're saying enjoyable. If you don't have the kids, would you still go see it? Or is it more of a...
Yeah, absolutely. Although I would say, yeah, I mean, it is. Look, and I'm not saying little boys won't dig it, too. But, I mean, let's face it. This is a traditional musical. I think it's a good date movie. I don't think you're seeing all the guys who went to see Creed 2 together going to line up for this. Or, you know, Aquaman's coming out. Mm-hmm. But it's a very, very entertaining film. And I do see it becoming a staple. You know, it'll do very well at the box office. And then in the years to come, it's going to be a home video staple if you have young ones. And it is. It's not necessarily a Christmas movie, but it has that holiday movie spirit to it.
Speaking of Christmas movies, I always watch Love Actually every year at this time. And I just, it's my tradition.
There's such a backlash against Love Actually now.
No, wait, what's backlash on because if, that?
You know, I love it too, but, you know, it was made about 15 years ago.
It was post-9/11. And they talk about that at the beginning.
Yeah, and if you look at it, I mean, you know, there are a lot of storylines there that are kind of like the woman is the object of the affection, whether it's the housekeeper that doesn't speak English or the Keira Knightley who's married to someone else, the best man's, you know, obsessing on her. Alan Rickman's character is the adulterous guy having the affair at this
secretary.
But that's
complicated. It's life.
And, you know, the two guys go to America and everybody there looks like a supermodel. And it's like, yeah. But it's a beautifully romantic film. And if you don't cry when Liam Neeson as the widower tries to get his young son to muster the nerve nerve and the courage to ask out that little girl.
Oh, gosh, before she gets on the plane.
Doesn't break for that. Or when Colin Firth tries to learn Portuguese and goes to the family village of the restaurant and tries to propose, and she. Spoiler alert, the movie's been out for 15 years.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out she's been taking English lessons. Oh, my God. It's like, oh, Henry with a happy ending. I love that movie, Anna.
In his broken Portuguese. Oh,
it's
gosh.
It's beautiful.
It is beautiful. I swear I have to see it every year. And I really.
And Hugh Grant is the prime minister who takes on the Clinton S. president, played by Billy Bob Thornton, and says, we are not going to be bullied anymore. Where he's really just talking about the fact that Billy Bob hit on his secretary, who he's in love with, but he's talking as if England's going to stand up to America.
Exactly.
Metaphor time.
How they wove that many stories together.
Yeah, that's also really cool.
I'll never understand.
Incredible cast. There must be
film school courses taught about that. I just don't understand, because that usually doesn't work. And somehow,
the most amazing thing, I think, is that the guy that holds up the cue card saying, to me, you're beautiful, and you know that's in love with Keira Knightley. Is Andrew Lincoln, who went on to become Rick Grimes in The Walking Dead. That's the same guy from The Walking Dead. Is the guy with the cue cards holding up saying, you'll always be beautiful and I love you and all that kind of stuff. That's the same dude.
I don't quite understand the backlash on that. I mean, he shouldn't have done that. It's about
the sexism of what some people are saying, that, you know, that it just has this ongoing storyline where the women are the objects of affection and the men are, you know, in pursuit of them. I think it's of its time, and I think it has a beautiful heart.
It has a beautiful heart and a beautiful message, and it just makes you feel uplifted at the time, at holiday time. Do you have a favorite that you watch every year? Is there anything?
That's one of them, right there, Love Actually. Mm-hmm. And of course, we always talk. I show Die Hard to my friends at Soho House because it is a Christmas movie. And you know, somewhere along the line, if we don't do it this year, we'll definitely do it next year. I'll get into why Lethal Weapon is even more of a Christmas movie than Die Hard. Lethal Weapon is a very Christmassy movie. It's Christmas all over again.
I would love to hear that.
Okay.
But we are going to check in with Judy Pilak, find out what's coming up, bottom of the hour in the news. And then we have a very special interview that you did with Steve Carell and Robert Zemeckis.
Yes, Ro and I talked to the great Steve Carell and the great director Robert Zemeckis at length about another movie coming out this week called Welcome to Marwen.
All right, here is Judy Pilak with the WGN tease for what's coming up at the bottom of the hour.
Michael Flynn got an attitude adjustment this morning, courtesy of a federal judge.
It's Ro Concho with Anna DeBlantis right here on 720 WGN. Richard Roper is in the studio. A guy named Robert Zemeckis is in the studio. And another guy you've never heard of, Steve Carell, is in the studio with us as well. They've got a new film out called Marwen, which
Welcome to Marwen
is absolutely amazing. It's an absolutely visually stunning. I would expect nothing less from you, Mr. Zemeckis, but it's a crazy thing. So, Richard, why don't you set us up in terms of what this is, essentially. So,
why would you have the director and co-writer and the star set it up? Let me explain to you.
I'll have you come.
I'll do the critics version for you.
Yeah.
So this is actually inspired by true events. In fact, there was a documentary about Mark Hogenkamp about 8 years ago, a man living in a small town, kind of just living his life. And through circumstances that the movie details, he suffered a horrific beating at the hands of five thugs, lost almost all motor skills, lost his memory, became really a different person, and found a path to, I think, therapy and self-realization through his art. He created an entire village, the village of Marwen in Belgium, during the middle of World War II, all of it fictional, and all of it populated by these intricately designed dolls, if you will, including his alter ego and various other dolls who represent real-life people that he has known, that he has come to know, that he's getting to know. And this movie is all about the twin journeys of the two Marks, if you will, played by Steve Carell.
Did he get that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful job.
Well, thank you guys for being here. Really appreciate it. Just want to make sure we sign off on all of that.
Absolutely.
So now this is going to be the third role for you, Steve, this year where you're playing a real-life human being. You're playing somebody who actually existed in history. And how does that change how you approach a role?
There's an added sense of responsibility. In part because obviously it's a real person and you want to do them justice. There's less left to the imagination, I guess. So it's double-edged sword. You know, you have more information at your disposal about that person, but at the same time, you can't just imagine. You can't just make stuff up.
And it's two characters here, right? Because you're playing not only the real life John Mark Hogenkamp, but you're also you're playing the character that he created, right?
Right.
This, yeah. Some imaginary character.
Yeah, that alter ego. That was really beautifully described too. I wish that you were sitting with us through this whole press junket because you encapsulated that story perfectly.
Oh, thank you.
And we're finding it's a tough thing to sell, really, because there are so many different aspects of the film. And, you know, you see a 30-second spot and this is a guy with dolls and what? Yeah. What's happening? I completely lost my train of thought.
I would say,
giving you a compliment.
Thank you. And yes, and next time you're talking to, Jimmy from How's It Going Topeka, just bring me in, and here to describe the film.
That's a
sidebar.
Great
I once knew a guy at junkets years ago who would put his name on the bottom of his shoe so that the stars would always go like, "Hey, Henry." There's a certain pop genius to that, right? I want to talk to a little bit about Mr. Zemeckis and people. I'm sure they know one of the great storytellers of our time. And, has always had wonderful, in-depth characters, but also has been at the forefront of technology, going all the way back to Who Framed Roger Rabbit and, the legendary Polar Express, which took things to a new level. And in this film, we do get that motion capture. And for quite a while, we're in that world before we pull back and realize there's a whole other story here. And as Steve's been saying, Robert, this is a little bit of a more difficult, if you will, or more intricate movie to describe, but it's also something you want to bring the viewers in. So was that a deliberate choice, obviously, on your part to start with more of the motion capture than the real life story?
Yeah, absolutely. I felt that, the audience needs to be immersed in the world of this imaginary world, and then explain, then layer on the live action world after that. Obviously, it's designed for a film, to be watched in a movie theater. You don't want to. It's not one of those films that I think you can stop and start, too easily, like on your phone or something.
If someone walks in 15 minutes into this movie, I'm going to have them thrown out of the theater.
That's
going to
be
what I miss. Everything.
That would be a little bit you would have to really be playing catch up if you walked in.
No offense to Aquaman, but and you should see all movies from start to finish. But if you walk 15 minutes in Aquaman, you go, "Okay, that guy's Aquaman."
This one would be a tough one. But anyway, yes, by design, it's supposed to like bring you into this world and then bring you into his world, and then as the movie goes on, we switch back and forth between the worlds, and then they kind of blend. So that's it's all happening in his imagination, and the movie brings it to life, and that's what movies can do better than any other form of storytelling.
So let's talk a little bit about the technology here, though, because to be able to separate Steve's character from the real live action guy to this motion capture character, you had to go through technology is very different now than when you first started doing that, right? And there's got to be a way it's visually stunning. That's the piece.
It's a beautiful
film. You get dragged in, and you almost, when you're watching the motion capture part, it feels very much like you lose the sense that it's not real, right? You lose the sense that it's not a human being or human beings that you're watching. So what's different there? What did you guys do to make that different?
Well, we did a lot of R&D because it was crucial that what you just described was, the audience can't be doing mental gymnastics and be reminding themselves, "Oh, right, this is that actor who's now this doll." It had to be seamless. You had to be able to go between the worlds. So the crucial thing was for us to be able to, develop the technology so that we could capture the complete essence of the actor, the power of their performance and their motion, and then wrap that on the doll, if you will, digitally. That's the best way I can describe it. So the actors are doing everything. I mean, they're when the dolls move, it is a complete human actor performance by my cast, and they're just moving these dolls. There's no animation whatsoever. The animation comes only from the actors. And we've got what we call it sort of a, an advanced performance capture that we have now, that we can actually take everything that the actor is doing and have him move this doll in our case. You know,
because the facial expression's human. It's not the sort of animated facial expressions that we've become used to, right? Or that it's really not, because the difference with Steve, and I guess as you're working this, as you're as working as an actor, you got to think about this in two different ways, right? Not just the characters, but also the way that this is going to look on film.
I didn't really think about that so much. I kind of left that up to Mr. Zemeckis. It's really still weird to be sitting next to Bob Zemeckis. I don't know what to call him.
To call him Mr. Zemeckis, because the Bob Zemeckis was a little overly
Bob,
familiar.
Yeah, I don't want him to hate me. Yeah, a little familiar. but you trust somebody like that who knows his way around this stuff. So it wasn't. I never thought, oh, I need to be more animated because however this is going to be extrapolated and put onto this doll face, I never sensed that I had to alter what I would have just done anyway for the character.
You've been listening to Richard and Rose interview. They sit down with Robert Zemeckis and actor Steve Carell. Both have Chicago ties, as you heard them. Born in Illinois, Robert Zemeckis and Steve Carell, a Second City alum. We have more of their sit down for the upcoming movie Welcome to Marwen coming up. But right now, let's check the news with Judy Pilak, sponsored by Townstone Financial. This is The Rokan Show with me, Anna DeVlantis. We now have more for you to listen into Richard Roper and Rose interview with Academy Award-winning director, Illinois native Robert Zemeckis. And you know him, you love him, actor Steve Carell. They were here in studio promoting their upcoming movie, Welcome to Marwen. Here's more.
One of the things I really enjoy, too, is the warmth of the film and the supporting. It's a great ensemble cast. I mean, it's Steve's film, but they're a lot of terrific actors. And as is the case in real life, no one in Mark's life is freaked out. In fact, everybody wants to have a doll and wants their doll to be represented in a certain way. And I think that comes across. Maybe, Steve, you can talk a little bit about working. Obviously, you've worked with Leslie Mann before, and she plays the neighbor across the street who becomes a key component in his life.
Yes. This film, she doesn't throw up on me, which I was very thankful for, as she did in 40-year-old
version. Did you check the script first, just to make sure?
Which incidentally was pink yogurt.
Oh.
Just wanted everyone to know that.
That's kind of worse.
You know, that's right up there with Robert's description of the intricacies of technology. And by the way, it's pink yogurt for the puke. So there's a lot of magic to movies. It comes in all forms. It comes in all forms.
How do you feel about that?
Leslie Mann is fantastic. She's great. Mm, and we all felt the same way about being a part of this. I think there was a devotion to the story and to the character of Mark. Everyone definitely had that in the back of their minds. And to your point about people feeling honored by being incorporated into his world, I was actually incorporated into Mark's real-life world. I told him this story that happened the first time I went to the Academy Awards, and he created a scenario based on this story that I told him, and he photographed it and he sent it back to me. So I have
this definitive version
in Mark Hogan's world. It's pretty great.
Now, what's interesting is we should actually go back and explain a little bit about I know this is all part of the story, but he became famous. He became a famous artist for creating these, three dioramas, I guess, is that the term?
And photographs of them.
Right.
Photographs of these tableaus that he would set up with these action figures. And then he would take photographs of them. And the photographs, were just magnificent, works of art
Absolutely.
That he created.
But the great thing about, again, with the film now is what Bob and Steve and everybody in the film has done. They've taken those photographs or those settings and turned it into an entire world. As the way I almost describe it, it's almost like a reverse Wizard of Oz feeling, too, because everybody in there is also a part of his
world. When I saw the documentary, I loved the story because I thought it was, I couldn't believe it was a true story. It's a fascinating true story. But also, it was just, powerful, hopeful story about this guy who uses art to heal. But I loved that he took these photos, and then I realized that between the photos were these elaborate stories that were going on in his imagination. And that's what made me think, now this could be a feature movie, because that's what a movie can do, is to bring that imaginary world to life. And that's what the mission was of the movie, and that's what we did.
So I always wonder about things like this. Did you just happen upon the documentary, or did somebody pitch this to you? I mean, how did this come to you?
In this situation, I was literally channel surfing, and I came across a documentary, and I started watching it. And after watching it for about 10 or 15 minutes, I just knew that I had to pursue this, that there was a movie inside this guy's story.
Does the technology come to you first? Do you think about the
Everyone thinks that, but no. Mm-hmm. Here's how it works for me. I can only make a movie if I know what the journey of the character is, what the human emotional journey of the character is. So it was his story that hooked me. But then I'm also a believer that, you know, what movie makers do, and they've done all through time, is they present spectacle to the audience. I mean, we go to movies to see things that we can't see mm-hmm. in real life, and that's what movies are supposed to do. And I love my favorite quote, and the one I subscribe to, is from Francois Truffaut. He said, a really good movie is the perfect blend of truth and spectacle. Mm-hmm. And so when I zero in on the human emotional story, and I say, okay, that's really compelling, then I started thinking, okay, so how can I present this in a way that we haven't seen it before? And I think that, you know, I just that just excites me. That's just something that I like to do.
Yeah, because it's an interesting choice. I like to imagine, as I'm watching something and I'm thinking, oh my God, if I knew how to make a movie, I would love to make a movie about whatever this story is, or write a book about it, or whatever it is. And so for the people who really, really, really do that, mm-hmm. like you, at, you know, this incredible Oscar-winning level, to be able to discern what makes for a good story and what doesn't. You know, and this does have all the elements. And I guess for Steve, for you, that in terms of choosing this character, deciding you want to sign on with this character, what were the elements that you were really looking for?
Well, very much the same thing. I stumbled upon the documentary as well a couple of years after you did, and I couldn't stop thinking about it. And what this man had gone through was terrible and horrifying and ugly, but the fact that he was able to take that experience and turn it into something else, something of value, something beautiful, really inspired me. And I thought he was heroic and interesting and kind, and he was all those things when we met him in real life.
So who came to you with the idea, and we were like, oh, I know that story, I love that?
I sought it out. I went looking for whoever had the rights, and ended up at
what happened when you saw Robert Zemeckis's name?
Let me look up this guy on IMDb first of all, and see if he's up to the task.
I checked around to find out, and yeah, Bob Zemeckis. I've heard of some of his work. Good choice.
And at that same moment, I was there thinking, you know who'd be great to do this? Is Steve Carell.
I thought you were going to say Brad Pitt, okay.
It's like just one of those, you know, perfect scenarios.
Wow.
Well, it worked out perfectly, because I think this, more than a lot of other movies, really is depending on the filmmaker's vision and the lead actor, because it is, I don't want to say tricky material, but it's complex and beautiful and layered material, and in the wrong hands it could go sideways, and it does not. People need to know that this, you know, as we're describing this film, it's also entertaining as hell. You know, it's not like you have to know all of this going into it. The story tells itself. It's great if you've seen the documentary. It's great if you've done your research. If you just walk into Theater 8 at the Multiplex to see a Bob Zemeckis movie starring Steve Carell, you're not going to be disappointed.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. It's not having to eat your spinach.
Right. Well, I think a lot of people, when they saw the trailer for Forrest Gump, were like, what's going to happen here?
Well,
and what
true.
Is it? Yeah. Where's it going to kind of go? And then, you know, I got the same sense from this film as I got from that, which is that it went in a way I did not expect. And it was constructed in a way that.
You know what? It's a lot less odd than you think it's going to be. You know, on the outside, looking in, and Mark knows this himself. Yeah. He knows his world seems strange to people, but he has a very good sense of humor about it.
Exactly.
And I think as you approach, when I first started watching the documentary, and I think when people first are introduced to this film, I think it's odd. It's a strange world. They don't know what to make of it. But once you start getting inside of it, you realize that it's very relatable.
Once you started on this, mm-hmm. was he on the set? Was he giving you notes as you were moving along?
No.
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 You don't like that. Was Donald Rumsfeld on the set with you? Or Vice?
Ironically, Donald Rumsfeld was on the set of Welcome to Mars.
Oh, very
well, he gave us no a lot of notes. In a way. In a way. Yeah.
But you did, I know we have to wrap this up, but you did meet with Mark, Steve.
I did.
And
yeah.
you become friends with him.
Yeah. We've become friends. Last night, as a matter of fact, I got an email from him. He was doing a Q&A after a screening, which he doesn't do very often. Mm. He's very private. And I think this is very typical of him. He said, I ask not to use a microphone because I don't like to use devices that make my voice louder than anyone else's.
Wow.
And that, I think, you know, when asked about, well, how did you look at his character? What did you try to learn about him? Those are the types of things I learned about him. He's incredibly generous and magnanimous, and that's, I think, a perfect indication as to the type of guy he is. Mm. He just wants to take up as much space in the world as he's been allotted and nothing more. He's very humble and really doesn't understand all the hubbub around him or his story.
Okay, so I see two lead actor Oscar nominations and one supporting actor nomination for you this year. Am I thinking too much?
You're voting for me, right?
I see you competing against yourself in at least one category this year.
Okay. All right.
So
I'll definitely have to tune into the Academy Awards.
You might want to. I don't know who the host is going to be. Right. Also, to find out who the host is going to be.
The ultimate moment where you're announced as the winner, but you have to do the fake applause for the other guy first. Talk about an acting challenge. And then, but me? I didn't prepare anything.
And be the host.
Wait a minute. Now, Mr. Zemeckis has a point. A point there. Mr. Carell, if nominated, will you run? Will you accept the party's nomination to host the Academy Awards?
Oh, I am all in. Who wouldn't want to host the Academy Awards?
Especially when you're up for
free. What a great gig.
Yeah. I mean, who knew?
There's no downside there.
The lack of pay, the combing through everything you've ever said, tweeted, thought, or dreamed of.
Oh,
just the inevitable review where they always blame the host for all 4.5 hours of the show, which is always my favorite. Why do they keep moving it along? Well, you know.
As long as every joke is a Welcome to Marwin-based joke.
I don't think I would be a good host. I think other people are way better suited than I am for that.
You know what? That's a non-denial. I'll take that right there. Steve
going
Carell.
Back to the days of the draft lottery, actually. If you get a high number, you're happy. You know, bones burst.
Steve Carell, thank you so much for being with us. Robert Zemeckis.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Yeah, great honor to meet you both. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That was the interview with director Bob Zemeckis and actor Steve Carell. They're sit down here in studio at WGN with Richard and Ro. Exciting stuff. We've got traffic to check for you. We're sponsored by TSA PreCheck. Here is Jen DeSalvo.